Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, what's up, man? Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTubers, hi. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up. And it also, isn't. Before you say anything, I just want to say thank you for coming to us from an undisclosed location, live in Las Vegas, fresh off appearances, autograph signings, NBA con, whatever you can name, Nikias Duncan has been there, and he has been game.
I don't know how I feel about any of that. Hello again, Steve. I don't know about appearances. I have been at the arena. Like there was a Top Golf appearance when I first got there. I had to phone with some friends. I think that's been the fun part of it for me. Like one, just enjoying the hoops, walking around, meeting people, putting voices to names and Twitter ads and all that good stuff, walking around the arena. So that's been fun. And then afterwards, you know, you get to hang out, you get to get some food, just chill a little bit, turn your brain off. So that's been a fun experience. Have enjoyed my Vegas experience so far. I have another week of it since I'm just here for the gauntlet. So I'll get plenty of summer league. We got W All-Star stuff at the end of the week. So by this time next week, the intro may not have the same juice. We'll see. But for right now, we're having fun. We're having a good time. Plenty of news, plenty of hoops to cycle through on this episode of the pod. We'll start on the W front since on Saturday, we had one game, which fine. But before that game, we had the WNBA All-Star Draft with Breonna Stewart and Asia Wilson, LaChina Robinson hosting things. A fun experience. We got to talk about these drafts, though.
Define fun. Because it seemed like it was fun for one person.
It was very fun for Breonna Stewart in particular, who I think she did a pretty good job drafting her roster. Like, all of these players are talented, so duh. But I think Breonna Stewart had herself a draft. Lots of current, former connections with her draftees, with her time from the Storm, overseas connections. Obviously, some Liberty players. Once we got to the reserves portion of the program, she just basically swept her teammates off the board early, which I think was a fun twist. And, like, both teams did, right? Like, you could see the through lines between, okay, I played with this person. I'm cool with this person. We with the same agency with this person. All right, we went to the same college. It was fun watching those connections play out in real time. And then the banter between Asia and Breonna during the draft was also fun. What were your primary takeaways from this one?
I think the funniest part was Stewie playing Asia with the starting lineup to where Aces went Aces connection, South Carolina connection. And Stewie was like, oh, cool. I will take Jewel Lloyd, Satu Sabali, and NECA. That's totally fine. We have no problems here. And then the final pick of Arike and as the starters, because Asia can't play the three, was hilarious.
Which one? You can in the game like this. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Give yourself some good. Yes, you absolutely can. I just got a good chuckle out of her, like, seemingly talking herself into, yeah, we good. Which she may very well be. But also, it did feel palpable, like, oh, this is not how I thought it was going to go.
One, that, and also having to draft Arike a day after the Wings beat the Aces.
You could tell she was banking on the Satu pick, but once she went Aaliyah Boston, and Breonna Stewart was like, all right, bet, we'll take Satu. There was like a pause. Even LaChina called out, like, what's going on? She's like, It's like she threw you off. I'm like, yeah, I had some things. I had a dark, Satu was a dark horse for me. Like, yeah, she wanted that versatility. She wanted that size. But that should be fun.
And Stu was like, you should have picked her.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Yeah, probably so. Like, I don't think Stewie, after spending the first pick on Brittany Griner, like, I don't think she was going to also draft Aaliyah Boston. I mean, Stewie can play the three, but I don't think she was going to do that. And that's something that the Athletic Sabrina Merchant brought up on Twitter as well. It's like, yeah, got to go draft strategy here in a situation like this. So, but no, that was fun. Just to quickly read off what the teams are, as we talked about the draft. Team Asia, her starters, Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young. You may have heard of those two, seen those three play together. Aaliyah Boston, Arike Ogunbowale. On the bench for Team Asia, Kelsey Plum, who just had 40 points, a franchise record for the Aces, on 18 shots against the Lynx last night. So that's fun. Alicia Gray, Alyssa Thomas, Cheyenne Parker, DeJuana Bonner, and Elena Deladon. We're going to put an asterisk next to Elena Deladon's name. There was some post-draft banter between Asia and Elena on Twitter. Like, both players made the note, like, Elena doesn't go last if she isn't hurt. We just don't know what her availability was. And then Elena's like, hey, do we get a prize for getting picked last? And Asia's like, oh, you getting active?
And so... Hey, real quick, the final round being Elena Deladon and Kalia Copper was hilarious. I don't know who is going to do the villain origin story, but go ahead and book it.
Yeah.
One of or both will be cooking here shortly. let me see them play the Aces and the Liberty in the playoffs. I am all in, bud.
And last EDD, pick, huh?
EDD was, hey, she tried to do it with the mat. Nah, she felt the type of way. We can be honest.
She did. And so we keep the asterisk again because availability was already up in the air. She did make her return over the weekend to the floor and then suffered an ankle injury. So we don't know what the severity of that is right now. And so I would imagine that could put her all-star availability into question. If she isn't able to go, Steven, then we can move forward. Who do you think it would be the all-star replacement for her? I think Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner, gets the choice on that.
Ooh. It's a good question. First thing that pops in my mind, Natasha Howard. Mm-hmm. Does Ryan Howard get some consideration?
I think that she's had. Yeah, like I think it's going to be a Howard would be my guess. Like Natasha Howard was someone that I had on that I had as an all-star reserve, did not make it. So if it's just let's replace this front court player with another front court player, then I think Natasha Howard would be the natural through line there. But Ryan Howard has been absurd. Also, very quietly, the Atlanta Dream, now 2 games over .500. They have won 5 straight, which is now the longest win streak in the W right now. They are cooking off the back of what Ryan Howard's been able to do. Like, she's had her own 40 ball in this stretch, which this is the kind of talent that she is. Like, she has an absolute flamethrower attached to her arms, and once she gets going, there isn't much you can do with that. So I think that would be a fine pick for sure. So we will just see how that goes. To the NBA side, we had the big reveal over the weekend on the details of the in-season tournament. It's going to tip off Friday, November the 3rd. It's going to go through December 9th, the semifinals on the 7th, the finals on the 9th. Those games are going to be played in Las Vegas, which should be interesting. We got group play in November, the knockout stage in early December. Steve, how do you feel about the in-season tournament? I don't think we've had an actual discussion about it yet.
Well, it's something that we've known was on the horizon for a while. We've heard whispers about it for a while. I had way more thoughts about the in-season tournament and the NBA Cup than I thought I would have. I like it. I think it's a fun way to add some juice to the early portion of the regular season. And maybe that's being a W fan and taking a look at the Commissioner's Cup and seeing what that has done for the W while not taking anything away from the regular season. Because I think the biggest thing for me with the league was, okay, how are they going to do this in-season tournament without really altering the regular season? And right. I think they got there for the most part. Because I think for the most part, and I know there's complaints because, hey, we get to yell, that's fine. Outside of the schedule release and the tournament nights, I really don't think people are going to feel a difference. And like these are games that were going to happen anyway. Like these were games that were going to happen.
Yeah.
Now they have a potential meeting. And so for me, the designated tournament nights stood out. I was like, ah, I see what you're doing here. Tuesday, Friday, now have another national TV stamp. It's not just, hey, we're showing games. It's like, hey, no, it's these ones. Mm-hmm. The in-season tournament games. A specific purpose is key. I'm interested to see what the scheduling is like. Like, can they flex out? Or are they just going to block certain matchups in?
Yeah.
Also, while we're here, I thought it was very, 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 and I'm sorry, League, I thought it was great that everything was just branded like in-season tournament, NBA Cup, tournament nights, insert sponsor here. Like, am I tripping? Was that the vibe or?
No, that I'm picking up what you're putting down.
So that's where the vision changed for me, right? Because now, hey, sponsorship. Now I'm thinking TV. And now I'm thinking play-in. And that's where I started to see the vision. Like, I know people were saying, hey, these players are not going to care about this any more than they care about regular season games. Again, they're going to be played. We go back to the play-in. If I'm the league and I can take a lot of the tanking talk off the table, I can engage more teams and fan bases and get some TV money for it, that's a W. Think about the timing of this in-season tournament. Why do you think it's happening right now?
gotta get that early season intrigue.
Gotta get the early season intrigue. Also, hey, we're the NBA. We have the regular season. We have the play-in. We have the playoffs. We also have summer league. We have the in-season tournament. Who would like to purchase some of this? If not all of it. If you don't want all of it, then hey, here's this. You can go over here. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine being the home of the Commissioner's Cup and the NBA Cup. Anyways, when you go back to the play-in, I tie it in. If I'm the league, if I can freshen up the start of the regular season, if I can ease just this much of the load management talk, just this much, I don't think it's going to change teams' mindsets. I don't think it's going to change players' mindsets, which is why you hear the league talking about, hey, this is going to take time to build up. We don't expect this. We've heard that.
Yeah.
But I think if you can shift that maybe 5-10 minutes to, hey, look at Group A. Hey, the Spurs are making a push in this really tough group. Hey, look at this group of death. If you can just shift it real quick, here's pool play. Here's a bracket. Have fun. I think that's fun. And I think the championship week feel with the quarterfinals happening and the semis and finals in Vegas in the same week is pretty fun. I think for me, the semifinals and the finals are the key. Like, I think that's where this could elevate if it gets nailed. You need moments. You need a packed arena, which is that's the work they're going to have to do. But it's Vegas in December.
Yeah.
Go ahead and walk into the locker room and be like, hey, instead of Cleveland, Chicago, Milwaukee coming up, hey, let's get a win and go to Vegas.
Yeah. Some team bonding, you know.
So that's plus. That was my start. Where were you at with it?
There you go. Plus 5 in the Royale. But no, I'm mostly with you. Like, I think the way that they're doing it and doing so early in the season, to bounce off a point that you made in the watch party over the weekend, with a lot of people feeling like the NBA season starts around Christmas, in the first 20 or so games of the season, it's teams trying to figure stuff out. Some teams get hot and then they cool off. Like, we have, like, the Wizards pump fake jokes over the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. But, like, we have that situation where, okay, we need to strike while the iron's hot or get the intrigue going a little bit earlier. And something that I've been yelling about over the last few years with, hey, why is insert young team with interesting talent only have 2 national TV games or something? If you feel like they're going to be bad later, it makes sense to highlight them early. Like, that's a point that I made with OKC last year. And they end up being better than a lot of people expected. But that's a way to increase the intrigue for even some of those teams where, okay, we might hit March and there are 24 games under 500 and they're just letting the young guys go and they might not have national TV intrigue. If you're giving them one of the special nights early on and they get the highlight on a Tuesday or on a Friday, that's an easy way to kind of build that intrigue with some of the smaller markets in the league early in the season before the top of the league really takes off. And it becomes about who's in the playoffs, who's in the play-in. So I think it's a nice way to thread that needle. You already hit on the major point. Like, these games are going to happen anyway. So if you can brand it, also make more money, add the intrigue, et cetera, that's going to be cool. And, like, similar to the Commissioner's Cup, it also makes sense that all of those games count towards, like, regular season stats or whatever. Championship game doesn't, since that would technically be, like, what, the 83rd game for the two teams that make it. So it makes sense that that would be separate. And, you know, prize pool, not going to hurt. You already mentioned the Vegas portion. Like, that's just going to be cool on top of the other stuff if we want to go down that route. I think it's going to be pretty cool. Like, I'm curious to see just how the matchups are doled out. Like, we have the groups, and we can briefly talk about the groups if you want. But I think it's worth the shot. I don't think it's with the way that they've rolled it out and explained how it's going to work, like, it seems relatively straightforward. Just in the back of my mind, just how you mentioned the load management portion of it. Like, how seriously are like the Clippers going to take it for a team like that. It's like, okay, are we playing Kawhi PG? Are we pushing for this championship game in Vegas? Or do we prioritize what it's going to look like in March and April? Like, so teams like that is kind of where I'm like, how do they take it? Or like, how do the Lakers take it if they're trying to make sure LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy? Because to your point, if they could get that big moment or that big run in the semifinals and the finals, like you would want to have those superstars in it. And so if it becomes apparent early, we ain't really pushing for it in the group play right now. And that affects what happened, how they set up like the knockout round and all that good stuff. So we'll see. But in a vacuum, like I like it. I think it's been pretty well done.
To bounce off your point, again, it's only four games. Mm-hmm. Group play is only four games. So it's not going to be this massive feel until things start to build up. And that's the funny part, because like think about the Commissioner's Cup. The Aces won the Western Conference portion of that. What?
it's clinched already.
22 days ago? Like, it doesn't take away from the fact that, okay, we get to see the Aces in the Commissioner's Cup. Who are they going to play? So I think as things build up and you see a team that maybe is close, or hey, if we win this, we can keep going, that may juice things up a little bit in that moment, in that Tuesday morning. You wake up, you look at the standings. Hey, we get this win. We keep going. Because the other part is, if you lose, guess what? You keep playing. You just aren't qualified for that. So that's where it's like, that's where I know the incentive talk is the thing, but these guys are going to have to clock in anyways. Let's see if we can clock in and win. Like, that's going to be the fun part. Like, the complaints about the stakes, like, I don't want draft picks associated with this. I don't think that's going to be a win for anyone. And then, like, you tell me the regular season doesn't matter, and now you want to put draft picks into this in-season tournament. And it's like, well
it matters now.
Very, very extreme, especially for players who are like, I get fans, that'd be cool for them, but if I'm a player, it's like, I don't.
You mean if Magic, I win, they might draft my replacement?
Magic Johnson meme. You never know. I got an expiring contract, but I do feel bad for the schedule makers, because that does seem tough. I think they tried to make it as clean as they could by going with conferences, but that seems like a nightmare. And we'll revisit that when the schedule comes out. But I don't get the complaints. If all the good teams win, guess what? You get a previously unscheduled matchup between good teams before Christmas. That seems like a win. Instead of the league trying to guess and cross their fingers and be like, let's hope this Tuesday game still looks as good as it does right now. No, we got group play. And that's where I think it'll be fun. Like, if the league can mess around with what games are on TV, now you can really have some fun with it. But if we have one of those stretches where the Orlando Magic have won four of their last five, and all four of those happen to be these games, now we got Orlando pushing the story. You know what I mean? Like, there's moments here. Like, remember the first play-in when everyone was like, what is this?
Yes.
And then you watched, and then you see CJ McCollum yelling at a camera saying, they can't guard me. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you have Memphis making that run they had. And then we're just coming off like the Heat and the Lakers both making runs off the play-in. So all it takes is a moment. And I think that's going to be the fun part to watch how that develops. Worst case scenario, they played some games. People made some money. Best case scenario, you got something that's going to give you a little bit before Christmas to be more engaged with the league.
And that leads into Christmas, and then that leads into All-Star, that leads into the playoff push, that leads into the play-in, which leads into the playoffs, which leads into the finals, which leads into Summer League. And the league continues to be a 365, 24-7 league. So you have a lot of fun there. So quickly, just the groups. We can list those off. In the West, it's going to be three groups per conference. So in the rest, Group A, the Grizzlies, the Suns, the Lakers, the Jazz, and the Blazers. Group B, the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Pelicans, the Mavs, and the Rockets. Group C, the Kings, the Warriors, the Wolves, the Thunder, and the Spurs. And out East, Group A, the Sixers, the Cavs, the Hawks, the Pacers, the Pistons. Group B, the Bucks, Knicks, Heat, Wizards, and Hornets. And Group C, the Celtics, the Nets, the Raptors, the Bulls, and the Magic. Any group in particular intrigue you?
Well, one, I like the way that they kind of split it with the pots, as far as, hey, if you finished here, you're in this slot, kind of World Cup style. It is Group C for me in the West. Yeah. The Kings off the year they had last year, the Warriors, who very quietly are silent this summer. There is the anger resonating from that team. You got the Wolves, up and coming, plus stars. You got the Thunder, up and coming with Shea. You got the Spurs with Wimby. That group's the one for me. If I had to pick one out East, actually, I'll let you go first.
Oh, no. Honestly, like, Group B in the East is just going to be some nasty, gnarly hoops, especially the top. You got Bucks, Knicks, and Heat, which is just the Eastern Conference gauntlet for Miami last year. But I think that's going to be fun. Like, healthy Hornets, just because the Bucks generally play a little bit slower, or they want to kill you in the paint. The Knicks play a little bit slower. The Heat obviously play the Hornets. The Hornets, when they're healthy, have always been a team for all of these teams where it's like, wait a minute. What do you mean the Hornets won 141 and 127 in a random January matchup? So, like, if LaMelo is there, he's pushing the pace. We get Brandon Miller, all the young talent that they have there. Like, that just feels like a, wait a minute, why did the Bucks go 2-2? Oh, the Hornets got them on the road. That's interesting. And then you get the Heat and the Bucks playing each other. You get the Bucks and the Knicks playing each other. You get the Knicks and the Heat playing each other. That could just be the sicko in me. But, like, I just love the stylistic clashes in here and some of the ruggedness we may see in that group.
You know, I should have known my personnel here. Nothing in this world should have shocked me. Like, Nekias Duncan taking the in-season tournament announcement and talking about the Charlotte Hornets.
I can't get away from it. That's so nasty.
No, you can't. We got to talk about it, buddy. We got to talk about it, pal.
I don't like this bit. I mean, you already took Group C in the West, and they had the Thunder in it. The Thunder and the Spurs, for that matter. So, I mean, just had to go down the list. That's just how it goes. Anyway, let's get into some more NBA news. I forgot to type it out in the doc. I'm just going to start here because we have to start here. So, last pod, I was very sad to start. Because the Orlando Magic Wade Bobo. And wouldn't you know it, the Phoenix Suns, fresh off the Bradley Beal trade, not too far off the Kevin Durant trade, this offseason where they've added flyer after flyer after flyer after cool vet after versatile defender, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know what we need? We need a 7'3 dude that can shoot and go coast to coast in transition, block some shots. Per Shams, they are going to be signing Bobo soon. I am excited. I don't know how much he plays. Garbage time minutes in Phoenix have become a lot more fun. And hey, if he improves a little bit, he might get some, might be the ninth man or something. That could also be cool. But Bobo on a very good team. The Orlando run work. The end. Your thoughts?
That's a real quick swagger change that you had from the somber nature that you opened our last podcast with. The only thing I'll say, if Bobo signs with Phoenix, and if I see a Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Eric Gordon, Kevin Durant, Bobo lineup, I am logging off my computer. I am unplugging my modem. I am turning my phone off, and I will see you in 48 hours.
Okay. I just think it's cool that they have Kevin Durant and center Kevin Durant on the same team. Like, I think it's just going to be a really fun.
All right. In other news, Malika Andrews just tweeted, Blazers GM Joe Cronin was asked if he was spoken to Damian Lillard since the trade request. He said no.
Ah, I see. So I guess all communication has gone through Cronin and the agent. And also, whoever the teams are that have reached out, I think we know who those teams are at this point. Huh.
Also, while we're here, a quote from Sean Hyken from Joe Cronin. In any deal, the goal is to come out with the best outcome. It could be more of a win now player. It could be a young player in picks. It could be just picks. There's no set parameters. That means, yo, we could do a whole lot of stuff, dog. Do you see the Scoot and Shaden and Simons? The possibilities are endless.
Can I be respectfully messy?
Yes.
You know what the alternative answer to that is?
What?
It could just be, can somebody else please offer something? So we don't have to do this. because this is the best thing on the table right now. Has anybody else, can somebody pull up DoorDash for us? I don't want what's in the refrigerator. What's open would be the alternative there. Oh, but that's pretty interesting.
We got food at home.
I don't want the food. It's unfortunate. Okay, speaking of things being at home, Greg Popovich does not seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. Greg Popovich has signed a 5-year, $80 million extension with the Spurs, as handed out by Greg Popovich. I don't know how that works exactly, but that man saw Wimby. He's like, you know what? I got a few more in me. I know that's going to be cool for Wimby.
Hey, I can imagine that Victor Wembanyama may reinvigorate the desire to coach a little bit. I think it's funny. Good for Pop, man, number one. It's kind of wild within like a year to go from, hey, do not go to Vegas and bet on us to win a championship, to, hey, we got Victor Wembanyama, to, you know what? Yeah, man, 5 more years, sure. I'll do it.
What's the reverse Magic Johnson? I'm just going to be here. I can't remember the movie. Just, I'm not bleeping leaving. So.
No, it's going to be, I am going to be here. If he wants to do it, and if he wants to take any question marks off the board, you know, as far as his future, I totally get that move. I'm sure someone in the universe is out there with a think piece saying this is back pay for all of the work that Greg Popovich has done. But salute to him. Hey, Pop is amazing. Wimby's going to be really good. See what we can do there.
See what we can do there indeed. Let's move to the free agency portion, non-bowl division, I suppose. I think we talked about it. Utah giving an offer sheet to Paul Reed, a 3-year, $23 million deal with some fun stuff attached. The first year is first fully guaranteed. The next two seasons are going to be fully guaranteed if whoever Reed's team was reached the semifinals in this year's playoffs. Philadelphia matched that deal. And so now they have Joel Embiid and Paul Reed and Mo Bamba and Montrezl Harrell is back. So an interesting center room. Congrats to Paul Reed for getting that money. We will see what S Philadelphia does. Do you have any deeper Paul Reed thoughts?
One that was top tier. Hey, I have an idea, y'all. from the Jazz to try and get that done. I mean, the human element speaks out to me, number one. Paul Reed was the 58th pick in the 2020 draft. For him to get this bag, salute. I think last year we saw more of Paul Reed. We saw more of the reasons why people asked to see more Paul Reed.
Yes.
The time is now, though. And I think it's one thing to be a potential young player or to have something that you bring to the table for a team. It's another when the direct deposit changes a little bit. And so it's going to be fun to kind of see Paul Reed really have a runway. New coach, role secure, everything's good to go. Big room in Philly of Joel Embiid, Paul Reed, Mo Bamba. I think they got some interchanging parts. Montrez came back, right?
Yes, Montrez is
back. So I think they have the bigs they want. Utah tried their best. I always salute the restricted free agency antics. But Sixers got their guy.
And good for Paul. Once again, good for Paul Reed on that front. On the West Coast, Dario Saric. Like, there were opening day of free agency rumors that he was going to sign with Golden State. We finally got the Dario Saric signing with Golden State news nugget, so we can actually talk about it at this point. 1 year, I would assume it's at the minimum, considering Golden State's financial situation. I really like the fit. For a guy that can operate in a lot of the actions that they like to run. Like, Golden State enjoys using their bigs as handoff hubs, as low post hubs, as high post hubs. Picking out passes, acting as off-ball screeners as well if they pitch it into somebody else. Dario Saric can do all that stuff and also shoot above the break. Can also make passes on the move. So if he's one of the guys attacking the tilted defense, he can keep the chains moving in that regard. It just makes sense. I want to see who he's going to be paired with in the second unit in light of the defense. I don't think he's an awful defender or anything like that. But I do want to see what the lineup construction is going to look like with him on the floor. But he seems like a hand-in-glove fit for what Golden State wants to do. And I think this offseason, for as limited as Golden State has been in terms of like the moves that they can make, obviously they had the big one, swapping out Jordan Poole with Chris Paul. But it just feels like a reversion to we need vets in the room. Two, we need some know-how in the room. And I think Dario Saric fits both of those modes. What did you think about the signing?
I don't want to echo too much, but I do love the fit a lot. I think they've missed having a big with Saric's skill set on the roster. I think the fit is great. I do wonder if he gets some of the Nemanja role of doing stuff with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. Like, people forget that was a really fun little mini unit that they had going. I think it's going to be interesting to see if the defense and the shot holds up. But more importantly, Saric is a better piece to the puzzle for Golden State than they had before. Mm-hmm. You think about Golden State, we saw a whole year of what happens when the subs happen, Steph Curry on off split graphics. For Golden State to still have Kuminga, to still have Moody, but also have Gary Payton II, Corey Joseph, Dario Saric, of course, Chris Paul. That's a pretty good upgrade, even from a base of adults who know how to play basketball in the second unit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it feels like they're gearing up now that a little bit of the Last Dance repeat stuff is quieter. So I am intrigued.
The vibes are going to be interesting in Golden State for sure. A trade update and then another trade, I guess, just to circle back. So Dylan Brooks, as we all know, is a Houston Rocket. Mm-hmm. That turned into a sign and trade, which then evolved into this five team monster. So
quick. What is this trade? Where's Patty Mills?
Oh, that's coming. That is coming. So the five team deal that brought Dylan Brooks into Houston, which quick Dylan Brooks note, the earlier reported deal for him was 4 years, $80 million. Over the weekend, Woj reported is actually 4 years, $86 million, with incentives that can bring that up to $490 million, which, interesting. I think that's still a descending contract, so not as bad. But Dylan Brooks got the bag. Props to him. Anyway, so Houston got Dylan Brooks. They got Alpha Kava. Memphis got Josh Christopher. They roped in the KJ Martin deal. So Kenyon Martin Jr. going to the Clippers. OKC originally got Patty Mills. And Atlanta got Ty Washington in cash, a little over $1 million. And then OKC and Atlanta did their own trade with Rudy Gay, Usman Garuba, and Ty Washington going to OKC, and Atlanta getting Patty Mills for now, per Woj, who noted that Patty Mills' expiring contract could have some value in future trades. So we will see if Atlanta keeps Patty Mills, but that at least answers the pod title for now on the last episode of Where is Patty Mills? He is currently a member of the Atlanta Hawks. There's your trivia for today. I'm trying to think, do I have thoughts, but I don't have thoughts. Like, I just want Usman Garuba to get a runway. I would also like for Ty Washington to get a runway. And I don't know if either of those things happen in OKC because of the young pieces that they already have. Like, there might have been room for either of them before the draft, but OKC gets Cason Wallace. And naturally, like, Chet Holmgren is just going to be back. So that center room is probably going to be pretty stocked. I don't know how Usman figures in there. So we'll see. I like both of those guys, though. So we'll keep an eye on it. Any other thoughts aside of, wow, this is a lot on either of those?
Can I be respectfully messy for a second?
Sure.
Did everyone else just show up to the party and win?
Maybe.
But think about it. Like, this isn't a shot at Dylan Brooks or Houston. We talked about their plan, their idea. We get it. Memphis just gets Josh Christopher for a guy they said, hey, can you please not clock in anymore?
Yeah. When you put it that way, that's a cool bet.
Look, the Clippers were hanging out and, oh, KJ Martin, an athletic wing. That fits right up our alley.
We need one of those.
Send him over here. And I like that fit double if he becomes a roller with their smaller lineups. I feel bad for Ty Washington and Usman Garuba. Because if Houston is a tough place to play, the other worst place for you to go is Oklahoma City. And that is exactly where you're going. But at the same time, I mean, OKC continues to just have all the really good young players. So I don't know how they figure that out. But that was a fun aspect. I was like, Houston, you did a lot to get this done.
Boy, did they. And I'll just add on the OKC front. And like, I touched on it a little bit when we talked about Houston in the opening weekend pod. But I do wonder at which point OKC really becomes like a consolidation option. And when we talked about it earlier, I was more so looking at all the picks that they have and the young talent they have on the roster. But now, since they've added two more young guys on rookie scale deals, it's just like, hey, man, at what point do you say, okay, we need a four or we need a two or something? Just anything that identifies like, okay, let's package some of these picks that we're not going to be able to use because of who we have. Let's package up these young players that we're just not going to have room for. And let's solidify whatever our top eight or nine is going to be. So I do kind of keep an eye on them on that front heading into the year.
I think it's they don't quite know who their top eight or nine are yet. Mm-hmm. They're a lot closer than they were, though. I think they definitely are understanding of, hey, these are our top guys. They are going with us to the next level. I think it's just making sure they understand the rest of the guys they have. I think they're a season away, to answer your question. Let's see what Chet does for this team and this group. And let's see what we need from there. But they're the team that is rising with their talent, but also a consolidation candidate. To where, mm-hmm. hey, if we do hit that level and we need to, we have the pieces to put together and get something else. So I think it's a win-win.
It is. And to your point about maybe taking a year or so, it's going to get interesting. You just hope everyone stays healthy because you want players to play healthy. You want teams to be the best they can be. But for OKC in particular, it would be nice if they get a healthy run this year and see what they have, because in light of the consolidation talks, like Josh Giddey is going to be extension eligible next offseason. I would imagine he's going to be in line for a rookie max or something slightly below it. And so, you know, the OKC is coming up on some decisions, I guess, is the easiest way for you to frame that. Obviously, we are a year out, so we'll get into that as we get closer. But just something to keep in mind. Also, just got another Woj tweet. Blazers GM Joe Cronin tells reporters on the Damian Lillard trade, if it takes months, it takes months. So we shall see what happens in that regard. Let's flip to the Vegas portion of the program. Let's talk about what we've seen. Opening stretch of Vegas games have been played. Obviously, we got some Utah, we got some California Classic last week. But the Vegas portion is here. We must start with Victor Wembanyama. In game one, 9 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, and 5 blocks. Did not shoot particularly well. 1 of 7 on twos, 1 of 6 on threes in that first game. And then the second game happened, in which he casually dropped 27 and 12, and he took 12 free throws, and he blocked another 3 shots and only committed 1 foul in that game. What are your early impressions of Victor Wembanyama, NBA player? How did you feel about his first two games?
Well, quickly, I believe that Victor Wembanyama is officially finished with Summer League. Mm-hmm. Salute to Tim Bonton. I think he put that out there. I think Mike Finger also had it. Victor as the NBA player, it's a curious way that you put it, because I've sat on this for a little bit. The reaction to game one was a lot.
It was stupid. Never mind. Continue. Go ahead.
But I took a step back and I realized there are some people that may have genuinely be the first time they've seen Victor Wembanyama. And just like with a TV show or a movie that your friend has told you is amazing and you go see it and you're like, what is this? I can see how that first game may have resulted in some of that. The tone and the words, it was a lot, but I can understand how it could happen. Victor, the NBA player, I think it was fun to see him get a taste. If you look back game one, Victor himself said, I didn't really know what I was doing out there. So that explained a lot to me. I was like,
yeah,
it made sense based on what we saw. We had the opportunity. We were lucky enough to stream some of Victor's games during the season this year. And so a lot of the things that we saw then popped up in that game one. So this isn't like brand new things. Physicality is the big one. We've seen teams try to be physical with them. Charlotte tried to be physical with them. Portland threw more switching at him. I think Shaden Sharp even had the matchup outright a few times. The biggest thing for him is, one, it's fun to watch him play. I know people like to say, we've seen Kristaps Porzingis, we've seen Bol Bol. I get it. It's a special one-of-a-kind talent. He's one-of-a-kind player. We don't have to do all that.
Can I jump in very quickly before you continue? I'm not going to go full-blown rant, I promise. But, like, let's go through the logical line where it's like, okay, yeah, we've seen a player like this before. It's still fun to see dudes like that. Like, if this is, and to be fair, like, I don't think we've seen someone with this blend that Victor has. no, regardless of how good he ends up being. Like, we haven't seen this, I don't think. Let's say this is like the eighth version of a Victor Wembanyama type player. That's cool. Eight times. That's okay. Like, why do we have to? Fine. I don't get that. Okay, continue. That's all I had.
No, I feel you there. I totally understand. I think the biggest thing is just the drives, or at least the attempted drives, especially in game one. He's going to have to find those driving lanes. It's similar to something we talked about with Chet Holmgren, where, hey, he's looking to drive. The defense is ready to hit him, and the help is there. And the help being there is important because, again, this is a large, tall human being. So the tween-tween ah-ahs look great until the guards are like, oh, you're coming this way? Swipe. And you saw during that Charlotte game more and more where the guards were just selling out. Arm help, strips, swipes, whatever it is, because they knew the ball was going to be there. What I did like from him was the contact he tried to initiate, to where I'm going to try and hit first. I'm going to try and deliver a blow. It wasn't always successful, but that's important to have that mindset and that aggression to where I'm here, I'm going to be a force. That's going to be important as the strength comes. The screening angles, and I know this is probably the most dunker spot Wimby breakdown of all time, but you knew what you signed up for, in the words of Nekias Duncan. It goes back to the G League at night game. He's got to find some comfort and rhythm there. I think very early in that Charlotte game, we saw side pick and roll on the left side. Victor comes to screen. Charlotte's trying to keep it on the side, ice it, and Victor's still standing there. And I'm like,
That's not it, dog.
The pop is right there. And then there are the moments where he's setting screens, no real screen set. Some of them are slips. Like, the footwork has to improve. The base has to improve. The hunchback screens, they gotta go. So it's those kind of things. But he's still a very magical player. Very fun to watch. Some of the plays, I mean, have a sequence where he's contesting a shot, gets a stop, goes to casually dribble the ball up, brings it up, dishes on a drive. Like, you just don't see that all the time. The fluidity of some of those pull-ups in the game against Portland, you don't see that all the time. What were your main Victor takeaways, especially as someone who was in the building for, I know you were in there for night one. You were in the suite for game two?
There was no suite. There was a seat that I was in, much like in game one, where I watched Victor Wembanyama. But anyway, one, before even digging into the Wimby stuff, the atmosphere in that arena, in Thomas and Bay, the atmosphere was insane. Like, it was, I'm not going to say like playoff atmosphere. That's way too far. It felt like marquee regular season matchup feel for a summer league game, which is wild to me. The crowd was buzzing. That man came out the tunnel. It was wild. It was fun stuff. Every time the man touched the ball, there felt like there was this collective gasp. Or like there was just a humming, oh my goodness, what is he about to do now? Which, honestly, looking back on it now, it was just funny how that first quarter went. No team could really get going. And then by midway through the first quarter, it's just quiet in the arena at that point. It's like, oh no. The moment is fleeting, it's tough. But beyond that, I thought Wimby was solid in his first two games. And I think I was more, I guess, measured about it because we got to do some of the Wimby streams. Shout out the NBA app. But because we got to do some of those, like, the weaknesses that I might have been harping on harsher if it would be the first time that I saw it was just like, oh, this is a continuation of what we saw. Now he's on the NBA level. These are the concerns that we voiced. And now, okay, it's happening. Let's see how he deals with it. The screening is going to be the big one for me. And I don't like it like this. Your parent, you know, you deal with something with the first child, and then when the second one comes, it's easier to deal with. I feel like watching the Wimby scream is like how I felt about Evan Mobley when he came in. It's like, what is this? Hey, brother, you are very good. However, if you could make a smidgen of contact, that would be helpful. I need you to do this. So watching Victor Wembanyama kind of whiff on screens, he's slipping out a little bit too early. The angles aren't great. And it's like, okay, this is annoying. This stinks. This has to get better. But like, okay, I've seen this before. I know how it can improve. Like the steps that Evan Mobley took from year one to year two as a screener. Like, Wimby can do that, but it has to get better. Go ahead.
So Victor Wembanyama is the, I don't want to eat food. of prospects for you?
if that's what we're going, you know what? Yes, yes, absolutely. I don't want to set screens. Yeah, it's kind of tough. So, like, the screening absolutely has to get better. The offense in general, and I go to the debut for him, the shooting percentages weren't great. You know that he tried to hit first. Like, you could tell some of the physicality bothers him. The swipe downs when he tried to ISO, stuff like that. I had a real issue with the way that San Antonio used him in game one. And maybe that's just because we got to see some Wimby games throughout the regular season in which they're running him off stuff, or they have some inverted pick and roll, or that he gets catches in different areas, etc. It was a whole lot of space, get the ball 28 feet from the basket, go create something. And he can do that. And I think he will be a special isolation scorer, especially for someone his size. But, like, that's a wild setup for him in day one. And while I don't think Charlotte's summer league team is particularly good, it is a very athletic group. And so you're, on one hand, like, I appreciate, let's throw Wimby to the fire. Let's accelerate the learning curve, especially if he's only going to play two games. If that was always the plan, then I can at least get talked into, we know this isn't ideal usage, but we want to see how he handles it. Let's speed this up. Let's get him used to the speed and the physicality and the reaction time. Let's just get him used to that early. But on the other hand, it's like you did not put him in position to really excel offensively in this game. And with that being in conjunction with him not knocking down shots, it all just looked worse. So then you got the screens, and then you got the missed shots, and then you got, like, him getting knocked off the spot or the swipe down and stuff. And that's where you get even more extreme reaction to the offense. So I didn't really enjoy that portion. The second game, though, was a lot of... Oh, go ahead.
What I was going to say to your first game point, the only time I necessarily got concerned was when it felt like he was forcing. Mm-hmm. Where there was a couple of sequences where it's like, let me just shoot this real quick. Oh, no. You know? And I was like, yeah. Ooh, let's not get into that portion of the program. But continue. Game two, what are your thoughts?
Game two, it felt a little bit better. Like, it still wasn't the most diverse usage for him, but they did sprinkle in more things. And I think you saw the aggression perk up even more in game two, to the point where it got funny in the fourth quarter, where his guards were just taking a bunch of shots and Wimby's just aggressively clapping like, hey, man, I'm cooking. I just hit this three to bring it within one. Can I get the ball, please? That'd be nice. But, like, I really appreciate the aggression there. Got to the free throw line a lot in game two. He was a monster on both glasses, particularly on the offensive glass. I think we all saw the face up in the first half where he takes the floater. He misses it, gets his own rebound on the other side of the basket. And then finishes an and one with his left. It's like, oh, that's neat. And if you didn't like that one, there was the earlier one where he just gets the tip slam without leaving his feet after a miss. And it's like, okay, he's just going to have instant value off of that. I don't know what you do with someone that has that kind of radius as a rebounder. And this is with him still trying to sort out the strength and being knocked off his spots. It may not matter because he has that kind of motor. He has that kind of length. He has that kind of reaction time, that kind of feel and being able to read the ball coming off the rim and stuff like that. So that was fun. And the overarching positive, I think, was just the defense for Victor Wembanyama. The rim protection was very real. We got to see him block a three-pointer, which was fun. But beyond that, even in the first game against Charlotte, he just got the Brandon Miller matchup early. And it was like, that's interesting. They switched him. He was up at the level, having to drop sometimes. I would have liked to see a little bit more activity from him off the ball, like really trust the length, because that's something that we saw during his regular season with Mets 92, where it's like, okay, I can afford to be a little more aggressive, even if it is my responsibility, just because I know I can get back and I have this length. He didn't really do that. I don't know how much of that was just trying to stay within the game plan and just figuring things out, or how much of that was the conditioning, which is something that he mentioned after game one. And, you know, the big quote was, I didn't know what I was doing out there. But the other one was like, he has to get his body up to stuff, which was interesting to me considering how much he's been playing basketball over the last year or so. So I will see what's going to happen on that front. But like the defensive instincts are real. They were palpable. He's going to be an impact defender from day one. The fact that he had these two games and how many fouls did he commit in those two games? It's very easy for summer league bigs to rack up fouls. The fact that he was never in foul trouble through two is it speaks to the kind of discipline that he has on the defensive end.
Well, I think if both of us have spoke to, we thought the defense would translate quicker than the offense, no? Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest positive if you're the Spurs, if you're Victor. I liked him, like watching him navigate screens. I liked him on the weak side. I think I liked his off-ball stuff a little bit more than you did. Mm-hmm. And maybe it jumped out to me because it's like, oh, here's this very tall person at the nail. Like, oh, he's right there on the weak side in position. Like, he just nailed those. It wasn't even a question. I think one of my favorite possessions against Portland, pick and roll defense, he gets to the level, he's flat. And then he's like, oh, let me show. So he shows out. And then his teammate switches. He's like, oh, guess I got this matchup. All of it looked like he did it on accident. But I think some of that's just because of how tall he is. Yeah. But I like the defensive instincts. To your offensive usage point, the first game pretty much felt like, hey, let's play. It felt like the only set they ran two sets. It was like chin action and wedge. And that's it. Which is fine. But the shot wasn't going. And I think that's the other part about like summer league playbooks. They are light, folks. They're light. Go turn on a summer league game right now. And this is going to be evergreen to a degree. Turn on a summer league game right now. Pick and roll. Delay action where the big has it. The free throw line goes to a dribble handoff. Elbow action. Some sort of pin down or stagger. That's it. If you listen to this, you have seen that happen at some point as you turn the game on. Turn any game on, any one of them on, you're going to see one of it. So that's where I was like, I'd like to see what it looks like when everyone's really engaged and we talk about the defensive playbook. We talk about our offensive sets. We actually have usage meant for you as opposed to, hey, man, you good, do stuff.
I got you. Can I just briefly say, man, summer league point guards are so important.
Ah, you sound like me.
I do sound like you. Because, dog, between watching the Spurs games, watching the Hornets games, watching the summer league Raptors when Marquise Knoll is not on the floor, dog, you got to have someone that can get you into your offense or can be your offense. Because otherwise, it gets funky for you very quickly. In a summer league setting. And it's a bunch of misses, then it's a bunch of transition, and the next thing you know, you down 18.
And that's the other part. Everyone's like, what were you doing? It's like, well, we had all these ideas, but our point guard did this and couldn't do that. So.
It's so, oh man. It killed me. It killed me. Oh, I'll also just add briefly on the Wimby front offensively. The passing is fun. The passing mm-hmm. popped. And so it's nice that even in the summer league setting, it's nice to see him reading the floor as well as he did. Even when the passes didn't work, I'm glad that he saw some of the stuff that he saw. And I think once you get him in the NBA situation where he's playing alongside better players, guys that can space for him better, guys that can move off the ball for him better, like I am going to be very excited for the minutes that he shares with Devin Vassell. I think that's going to be a very fun pick and roll partnership. I think if they're running any kind of clear out for Wimby and Devin Vassell is one pass away, or even two passes away, the way he's able to move off the ball, I think that's going to be a very fun partnership to watch in San Antonio. I'll just throw that out there very quickly. But once he gets that, he should be a lot more efficient. And again, you compare the two games, he still wound up being efficient overall. So Victor Wembanyama is very good at basketball. Let's go through some of the other lottery picks very quickly. We only got one game apiece from Brandon Miller. Jesus. From Scoot Henderson.
You good? And our man, you right over there, pal?
Hey, man, it's been a whole lot of Vegas, man. Actually,
before I'm going to pause real quick because this episode should be on YouTube, so I need to make the disclaimer. Nikias' Vegas is a lot different than what you think of Las Vegas. This man has been doing top golf, shooting basketball shots, drinking apple juice. Eating waffle fries, like it's that's not the fatigue level for Nikai. Just so you know, I figured I'd get that disclaimer out there for you, big dog.
I appreciate you.
Nikias Duncan has a problem.
Yeah, my problem is that it's hot. That's all I got. Actually, before getting into the Scoot Henderson Amen Thompson game, which ends up being their only summer league game appears due to injury, did you have any updated Brandon Miller thoughts? Because we talked about him on the last pod.
It's the defensive base. You can kind of see still has some of the same issues we talked about in the last pod. I think offensively, I'm giving him some wiggle room because I don't think the context is the best for him.
Yeah.
To get the looks that he may want to get. It's not quite the Jabari Smith Jr. experience from last year, but it is, hey, Where are you getting the ball? Because when he's getting the ball, he's actually making plays. And he's playing next to James Bouknight, who is looking to get buckets. All due respect. No disrespect.
He's still Nick looking.
Nick Smith Jr. also looking to get a lot of buckets. And it took me back to when I was in Memphis, and shout out to my guys, but we had Josh Selby, Jeremy Pargo, and Tony Roten all on the same team. I remember sitting, scribbling on my little practice card pad, and be like, okay, so how do we make this work? But they're all good, but like we have to play them together. So sometimes you get in these scenarios where the context didn't work for anyone. And that sucks because you're just sitting there in a polo like, well, what this is what we mean? Thought could happen. I think for me, the biggest thing is like improve the defense. And then offensively, I would like for the little two dribble, one shot, like the push floater thing that he does. I would like that to just be a pull up. Just go ahead and do a pull up on that one. Yeah, I don't think we need to do that right now. I keep that in your back pocket, but I don't. Something about it. It just two dribbles and it's like, ugh. And I'm like,
I do you get think, it, but also. Yeah. Do you think that's just a preference deal for him? Or do you think there's like a footwork issue with him getting into pull-up twos?
I think it's an instinct thing for him. Okay. I think he's got the footwork to get to his pull-up when he wants to. I just think he likes surveying and coming down and he sees, oh, I have a little bit of space. I can get this off.
Yeah.
I think the pull-up would be better for him.
Got you. Using the release point. It's pretty high. It's going to be fun. He's a fun creator, though. Like, I don't think he's super bursty. I don't think he's going to be a high separation guy, which I think is okay. I think that's highlighted in a summer league situation like this, where he didn't have real advantage creators alongside of him, so he has to do a lot by himself. But you can still see the flashes like, okay, it's Chris Middleton-y, where it's like, okay, I can't get a bunch of space, but all I need is this, and I'm good to go. Whether that's inside the arc or from three, and the multitude of looks that he can get from three. So I think he's going to be a fun player. Like, I'm ready to see him on the main roster as well, but just figured I'd get your thoughts on that. Scoot Henderson and Amen Thompson, though. 15, 5, and 6 for Scoot with a steal. 16, 4, and 5, 3 steals and 4 blocks for Amen in the Blazers in that game right before the Wimby game on Friday. And so, naturally, we got an ankle injury and a shoulder injury, so both of those guys are done. But we'll start with Scoot. What did you see? What did you like?
I liked a lot of what Scoot did. I think the burst, obviously, is one of the biggest things that jumps off the page. Him in the open court is going to be very, very fun. But I like his purpose, Nikias. Mm-hmm. I like the way that he is able to change speeds as a young guard. I think that's very important. And I think that some of the plays where he drove in transition, attracted the defense, kicked it. That's fantastic. I think seeing the defense go under in pick and roll and understanding that and processing that and, okay, let's get a rescreen. Let me get right to my pull-up since you're going under. Those are smart plays from a young guard that you don't necessarily see right off the top. And so I think if you're a Portland Trailblazer fan, not to quote Kevin Durant, you might feel all right. Hey, I mean, you might be sad. I understand. But you might, hey, that's pretty good. What were your initial Scoot takeaways?
He's insane. Or I guess to quote Samson, you know, just cackling at what he was doing. Just watch the first quarter of the Scoot Henderson experience. Like, watch the whole game, obviously. But the first quarter in particular, you saw him in transition. You saw him operating with different speeds in the half court. The passing reads that he was making. The pull-up is really what stood out to me. So I'm glad you started with that and recognizing the unders. Because I'm looking at how balanced he was, how square he was, the release point and the lift that he was getting on that jumper. I was like, you know what? I'm glad that he's willing to take those. I'm glad the footwork is solid enough for him to get to that. Also, with the way that he elevates and how quickly he can get to it, if he becomes like a 44, 45% mid-range shooter, I don't know what you do with Scoot Henderson. Because he's a walking paint touch. And is a really good passer on interior feeds and those kickouts. If he can just, oh, you're going under, fine, 17-footer bop. If he just does that and your contest also can't bother him, like there's going to be some real 2.5 level scoring with him. I don't know what you do. And so, like, I really enjoyed watching him operate offensively. Defensively, I find myself intrigued. Like, like a lot of young guards, like the screen navigation isn't great right now, but it's not from a lack of effort from him. I think he just has to learn angles and how he can kind of shave off some time, shave off some space, take him, getting a little wide, trying to fight over and stay attached. That's going to come. But like, he is so strong already. That combined with the plus wingspan that he has, like, I think actually now getting to see him more, I feel like he's more switchable than you would think his archetype would be. And the fact that he's going to get stronger as his career goes on, like that bodes well for him. I'm intrigued with the type of defender that he can be as well. I don't know if he's ever going to be like an all defense level guy or anything like that, but he has an interesting foundation for a young point guard.
And mark it down, folks. More dunker spot history in 2023. Nekias Duncan enjoys a Portland Trail Blazer guards defense.
You know what? I don't know if that's... I think that says more, but you know what? Never mind. It's fine. We will let it rock. Did you have any concerns with it?
Concerns? No. I mean, I wish we had been able to see his second game. It would have been nice to kind of just be able to counterbalance the data, but I think you saw what you needed to from him. I think he's ahead of the game to a little bit. Even on the drives where he got cut off by Thompson, who was working his tail off. That was a fun matchup to watch them go back and forth. There was a comfort and control that Scoot had where, oh, you cut me off, let me back dribble, try again. Or let me back out and get to my pull-up. Or let me back out and move it. That's key. I think for me with Scoot, it's the little pieces where it feels like, okay, he may be a little bit more ahead of the game in some areas than I had thought. We talked about changing speeds. We talked about the pull-up. But there's just a control where he knows, okay, usually with these young guards, we're talking about they can drive. Now they need to add a pull-up. And this is no disrespect to Jaden Ivey, but my mind goes to Jaden Ivey, who came here to Summer League, not with the expressed intent of I'm working on my pull-up, but you can absolutely tell he came to work on his pull-up.
Yes.
And Scoot's already displaying that. Scoot's already displaying turning the corner and finishing. Scoot's displaying turning the corner and drawing and kicking. So there's positives to where, okay, that's going to translate. And if you can get that out of Summer League, that's a win for you.
I got you. On Amen Thompson. What a fun athlete. What a fun finisher, which I do have a brief question mark on that front.
Go I'm going to pause you real quick.
Okay.
The play he had in that Portland game, where he took one dribble and was right outside the elbow, I want to say, and just took off and did like this like up and under type. I don't know how he got the shot off. I have seen floaters. I have seen runners. I have seen, you know, 2 feet jumping off. I don't know how many times I've seen that. This man went with a one dribble frog splash.
I never heard it described like that. And yeah, I think he missed the shot, but yeah, I had the same reaction.
I didn't care if he missed it. I was like, how did he shoot it?
Yeah. Yeah, he is wild. But like beyond that, which that's a lot of talent to say like beyond that, the passing from Amen Thompson, dude. Steve, you've been doing this pod for me for a long time. You've known me even longer. You give me a 6'6", 6'7", plus dude that can pass the basketball, I am in. You give me a 6'6", 6'7", dude that can pass like that, I am super in. And then you add in the athleticism and him having like the gold acrobat badge and silver slithery and my brother in hoop. Amen Thompson is wild with the ball in his hands. I had a lot of fun watching his debut offensively. Defensively is where I was like, I see it, but also. And really? This might just be the matchup that he had. But like now that I'm getting to see, and I had a similar thing on his brother as well. We can talk about it briefly. But like, he moves so well laterally. He is very good at mirroring dudes in space. But I also kind of worry, he feels like very upright. And because he's upright, he has to rely on like that anticipation a little bit more. And again, he's very good at it. But when he guesses wrong, he's wrong. And so I do kind of worry about some of the screen navigation that we saw in that opening game. And I do wonder, like, how Houston counters that. do you just put him, like, do they just switch more with him? That wouldn't surprise me. But also, like, if your five is going to be Şengün, like, how switchable is your team going to be? Is it going to be, hey, let's just run more ice with him to kind of mitigate some of that? If so, like, I think he could be insane. If you're going to just try to keep something on the side and he could just use his length and his ability to move laterally and the instincts from there as a swipe down guy or as like a rear view contester, I think he has all of that. But like that kind of popped in my mind as I rewatched it earlier today, because like watching him live, I was like, holy crap, he's got the scoop matchup. This is fun. He's moving. He's making plays. Offensively, he's doing the wild stuff. And then rewatching and getting to like slow down position, stuff like that, I was like, huh, this isn't as tight as I would like for it to be. He's a rookie in summer league, so duh. But that's where I'm like, I wonder what this looks like when he's guarding James Harden or when he's guarding like a shiftier guard. Because if he's going to be upright and guys are able to wrong foot him, again, he can recover. He can chew up space like crazy. But I don't want him to be in that position all the time, especially in light of what his front, who his front court partners might be.
That's fair. I had a unique experience watching him play defense in that Portland game from the aspect that I felt like the contain was very good. And it wasn't that he wasn't active, but there were the moments where I was like, okay, where's the juice? Like he was there. It wasn't like he wasn't in a stance. He was trying, but I was like, okay, what else is there going to be? What other activity are you going to show on ball? And then off ball, you can see sometimes when he did switch or when his man was spaced and it wasn't Scoot, he was standing upright. He was in position. So, hey, I'm here at the elbow. I'm showing my help early, but he's upright. And now, hey, is your man cutting back door? Is your man about to get a rebound? Those kind of things. So where you can see, okay, he's young, but there is a base there. And I also wonder how much does that pop with this Houston Rockets team that hasn't been able to really hang their hat on defense? So that's where I'm like, does it look better in that context next to what they've had before? I don't know, but I was impressed.
I got you. To his brother, I saw 7 points in the debut, 7 points, 9 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and 3 blocks. And then in the second game, 12 points, 8 boards, 6 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. The man filled the stat sheet. Also fun in transition, not as twitchy as his brother, but like one, just a very brief note, not important at all. As 2K has added like pass style animations, can the Thompson twins have their own pass styles? At the very least, their own layup packages. They just kind of have to. But beyond that, like I had some of the same, he seems upright. I would like for him to be a little bit more prepared defensively, if that makes sense. But like I felt better about his on ball defense than I did with Amin. But again, that could just be the matchup since he got the scoot, you know, Amin got the scoot matchup. Asar did not. But he seems fun. For sure. I like his feel off the ball. For sure. Like, he got a lot of cuts, a lot of relocations. Even when he didn't get the ball, it was nice just seeing, okay, he knows how to read the floor when one of his teammates drives. Like, that's going to be cool. And him being an open floor playmaker, like, that popped immediately. Picking out guys, even if it didn't lead to direct assist opportunities, it's like, okay, I got two guys filling the lane. Let me hit the trailer here since the defense is already trying to get to the guy that's ahead. So, like, him thinking a step ahead, like, you can see some of that stuff pop in transition for him. I think after watching those two games, and it may be unfair, but my mind immediately went to, okay, what lineups is he going to be in this year? Because I would like for all of this to pop. However, if Cade's back, Jaden Ivey in year two, and they added some shooting, but also it's not the spaciest roster in the league, will the defense be good enough for them to get in transition enough to really make this pop? Because both of the Thompson twins have some shooting question marks. Will he have the context to really thrive the way that I think he can in year one? I'm not sure. And again, it may just be unfair for me to think about that early, but that was something that popped my mind watching him. But I liked a lot of it. Like the activities there, he really has a nose for the ball on both ends. Again, I mentioned the cutting defensively, him flying in, crashing in for defensive rebounds. I would have loved to see a little bit more activity from him or a little bit more aggression when he was like at the nail or something. It felt like the swipes from him were a little bit late, but he at least knew where he needed to be. So I would imagine as he gets more used to the speed of NBA offenses, like that's going to perk up because the instincts are there. But no, he was also another fun watch for me.
The drives from Asar were fun. The defense activity was fun. A couple of those blocks he had was fun. I like your point of the Pistons. If they can just be functional as a defense and get stops and run, they boost their profile. I think the runway for him at the three is what intrigues me the most. And that's where Detroit's got to make a decision lineup wise. Hey, are you going to play small? Is Bojan going to be your four? Are you going to keep playing two bigs? How are you going to handle that portion of it? Mm-hmm. But I've liked that. I think the big thing for me, it's not so much the shot, and it's more, okay, if spaced, what do you do? Can you drive close up? That's the one for me. And there were a couple plays against Houston where Jaden Ivey would create, kick, now it's an extra pass to Asar, and now it's, oh, attempt to drive, cut off, everyone stays home, now what? So you can't have those. Has the right mindset, but that's something I'm keeping an eye on.
I think that's fair. I think just what he does in the intermediate area is going to be interesting, period. Because I look at Amen, and like I have some of those questions in terms of the touch. Like, I don't know how much of a mid-range jumper he has right now. But because he can just glide, it almost doesn't matter. Like, his mid-range attempts just turn into layup attempts somehow. And the brief note that I was going to have on Amen on that point was, like, he feels very left-hand dominant when he's driving right. And so it was cool to watch him get, like, the and one where he takes the bump and he finishes with his left hand on the right side and get that layup. If that's just what he likes, I kind of worry about I think he's going to have an early welcome to the NBA moment on that front once he faces off against NBA rim protectors. So I want to see what the diversity is. I'm not super worried about that long term. Like, you mentioned the wild layup that he took. And so, like, I know he can, but I want to know how quickly that's going to come. But no, I think that's a good point on Osser for sure in the intermediate area. Other than that, again, it's just going to be the jumper, just seeing where it lands. I think that's going to unlock a lot more comfort with him off and on the ball. And I think that answers some of the closeout questions. Like, all right, well, I'll just rise up, shoot over you if necessary. And if not, being able to get downhill, flow into floaters or whatever. I think he's going to be fine, but I think that's fair to check out. Let's go rapid fire to close things out. Some other players that may have impressed us, if I can start, if you don't mind.
Of course, you got to know your personnel. There's no way we were starting a summer league players that impressed list and not letting Nikias drop off these 38 names that he has.
I don't have 38. See, here's the thing, because, you know, we got to be a little more concise on the pod. Like, I my list might start with 38 names. Now they're like, all right, who are the six or seven now? But as we record, I guess, Monday afternoon, I'm still trying to do time conversions in my head and stuff. So, like, I'm going to go see Orlando a little bit later today. So I will get, hopefully, game two of Anthony Black. But the first game of Anthony Black was very fun. 17-5-5 with three steals for him. He just very cliche to say, but he just knows how to play basketball. Like, I just like the feel that he plays with. We're going to see where the jumper lands, but can get downhill, embraces contact on drives, which I think is a good sign with him being a bigger guard. Like, knows that he's big and knows how to use that size. Like the passing feel from him, especially on those interior feeds. Like, he seems to be a very good pocket passer early. And being able to make tight window passes are important for lead guards, but especially in light of Orlando's situation, where they're, again, attempting to add shooting. Did so in the draft, got Jet Howard, also got Joe Ingles. Like, it still isn't the Spacey's group. So if he can net those down, there may be more of a path for playing time for him. Jordan Hawkins hasn't shot super well from three through two games, but the various ways that he can get to his shot, both outside the arc and inside the arc, is a lot of fun for me. I hope New Orleans is able to carve out some time for him at some point. It's going to be fun. Go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, smooth like butter, and the fact that he can drive closeouts. Going to be very fun. Continue.
Yeah, here we go. On the Detroit front, Marcus Sasser, dude gets after it defensively. Had a lot of fun watching him. Jalen Pickett in Denver, another dude that just knows how to play basketball, just has a nose for the ball, can act as a connector, can do a lot of things. So I want to see more of him. Andre Jackson Jr. Milwaukee opened up a summer league on Friday. A pair of wild blocks for Andre Jackson Jr. Just keep an eye on him in Milwaukee. That's all I'm saying. Also, if we're keeping the eye on folks in Milwaukee, Nico Mannion just doing things in summer league. That's neat. I don't know what it's going to mean for the NBA future in particular, but shout out to him. Jordan Walsh in Boston, 3-and-D archetype, gets after it. Got the shots up against Miami. That's been fun. Colin Castleton. We didn't get to talk about the Lakers last week. Max Christie also had himself a run of between the California Classic and Summer League. Colin Castleton, you know how I feel about big men that can pass. It's so funny that you mentioned, like, the delay portion of teams only running like four different things. It's a whole lot of delay action with Colin Castleton, but that dude can pass. We've seen some fake handoffs into drives for him. post game. Hey, man, I am intrigued. I think he's on a two-way right now. I'm going to be keeping an eye on Colin Castleton. The Lakers scouting department might have did something. We are going to we are going to see. And then just on the year two front, Jabari Smith Jr. and Tari Eason are both done. Jabari did not have to do that to James Wiseman. He just didn't have to do literally any of that. And then he also didn't have to say, this dude can't. Come on. Let's be nice. You're not wrong, but you don't have to say it. And then Tari, like, he just seems a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands. Finally, Orlando Robinson. 36 big ones against Boston. And beyond the actual stat line, again, processing speed just seems a little bit quicker. This is a rehash from last pod. He's really leaning into taking threes. And if that's even a portion of, even a portion of that is real, Miami's going to have some interesting backup center decisions to make. That's all I'm going to say. That's my list.
All right. I'm impressed. YouTubers out there got some homework for you. Comment below the size of the players that Nikias named. I'm trying to see something here. Trying to see if that matters. Real quick. I'll go quick. Quick rapid fire. Kaysen Wallace, love the fit in OKC. Very impressed by that shooting. Kenneth Lofton Jr. always gets a salute from me. Andrew Nimhard graduated from Summer League. Man got whatever he wanted to. Bilal Coulibaly. Really like the flashes that he showed. The athleticism and the aggression on the drives. Jaden Ivey again here to work on the pull-up. James Wiseman accepting the now annual Detroit Big Show That You Can Stretch the Floor Challenge. Went and took that from Isaiah Stewart. Like the aggression from Dyson Daniels and Marshawn Beauchamp, just trying to elevate in different roles. Quick shout out to Michael DeVoe.
Yes.
That man saw the Wemby matchup and Scoop being out, and he decided to become Michael DeShow. Clippers opened up a whole summer league game in zone. It's fun, man. We're going to have some fun with it, man. You know what I mean? Hey, why you shuffling there real quick? Oh, I still got time. I got 45 seconds. You ready to rapid fire some free throws?
Let's go. Wait. Before you go, Keyonte George is very good at basketball.
How did I forget the guy I've been talking about all weekend? That's my guy. I've been tweeting about him all week and I forgot about him. That guy can hoop. He can shoot, and the playmaking, we're going to work on it. But he's getting there. I like his game. The drives, I was not familiar. I'll tell you that much. Or not as familiar as I should have been. Back to the free throws.
Okay.
Special for all the dunkers out there, Dunker Nation YouTubers. They seem to like it. How much cackling have you done in Vegas?
A lot. Okay. A whole lot.
Is the Las Vegas Aces run going to be ruined by zone?
I hope not. It'll be some irony considering Becky Hammon busted it out, had articles written about the Aces running zone. But we'll see.
Who was more mad to be in the final round in the All-Star draft? Elena Deladon or Kali Akamu?
Probably Elena Deladon.
Okay. LeBron James was recently spotted coaching. Funnier reaction, Lanita sub, La Can He Not Sub, or La Clock Malfunction?
The dark horse answer might be La Certified. Did you see that post about?
Yeah. Do you think getting a quick handshake from LeBron and a handshake line post game is enough for a villain origin story?
I hope not.
Okay. Are we underrating the combined will to win with Chris Paul and the Warriors?
Yes.
More jarring photo: Chris Paul holding a Warriors jersey or Chris Paul sitting next to Stephen Curry watching Summer League as teammates?
Probably him holding the jersey.
Okay. More comfortable, Jordan Poole and his message to Wizards fans, or Chris Paul holding a Warriors jersey somewhere in the Thomas and Mack Center?
Man, it's probably Chris Paul, because Jordan Poole, man, check his eyes, man. I didn't like that. He didn't seem pleased. I hope he's all right.
Better reaction, Sabrina Ionescu being on the cover of NBA 2K or Roman Reigns winning the 2015 Royal Rumble?
Can we answer push here? Because nobody was
happy. Okay. Oh, did Lord. Kelsey Plum have to jump off the top rope in that moment?
Yes.
Okay. Lastly, is Patty Mills, always looks right. Is Patty Mills just 99 overall Luke Ridenour?
That's so nasty, but also...
My bad, Luke.
God. I don't know where... where's Patty Mills' electric bugaloo? I don't know. We'll give him 92 overall.
Okay. You
know, there's still some VC to buy.
All right, take us home.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. We're having fun discussions in there or just reacting to tweets that we don't want to on the timeline. So, you know, catch some tea. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link will be in your description. It is free, no shenanigans. So it should be hyperlinked. If it is, just click on that, enter your information. Again, it's free, no shenanigans. If not, copy and paste the link into your browser. I don't need to say it again. Just get in there. We're watching NBA. We're watching some Summer League stuff. We're watching some WNBA. Watching wrestling, golf, reality television, tennis over the last couple of days. Steve was in shambles on Sunday. It's kind of tough. But yeah, watching a little bit of everything. So come rock with us. Come join the community. Let's have some fun. Get some live analysis. Get a whole bunch of laughs. All that good stuff. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Messed up my hoop grid. Darn.